This is the Inclusivity EQ podcast with Saul Gomez, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and relevant people on the planet. Hear their stories and get the most important business lessons they've learned on their road to success, and get exclusive access on how to implement their success into your life and business. The Inclusivity EQ podcast is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board and your host, Saul Gomez.
Welcome, everyone, to the Inclusivity EQ podcast, where we explore the power of inclusion across various industries. I'm your host, Saul Gomez, and in today's episode, we're diving into the impact of inclusion on organizational climate and culture. Now, to guide us through this discussion today, we have a special guest, Ms. Veronica Lawrence Ortega. She's a retired Navy Master Chief, an industrial and organizational psychologist, a change management and organizational culture expert, and as I understand it, a doctoral student, and someone that I have the distinct pleasure and honor of calling a friend, a sister from another mister, and a sister in arms. Welcome, Veronica. Thanks for being here with me today.
And thank you so much, Saul, for that warm introduction and the ability to continue to collaborate to create more inclusive workplaces.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. First, tell us a little bit about you, some of your background, and how you got to where you're at now.
Very interesting you asked that question. So I was born and raised in the Dominican Republic, and at 17, I moved into the United States. I finished high school here, and then I joined the United States Navy. I served active duty 24 years, and what got me into people's work, which is what I called so much the industrial psychology realm of things, was basically a couple of things that happened early in my career that helped me understand the importance of inclusion and representation and helping people feel like they count instead of counting people. That was the genesis of looking into industrial psychology and then moving into that area of study and getting more interested in serving the purpose of helping people do the best work at work. And so it's been a journey over 13 years, and I continue to endeavor into this type of work where we are making inclusion at the forefront of organizations.
Got it. Now, you mentioned something about representation and inclusion. A lot of times I hear people using the term inclusion and then diversity, and they use it interchangeably. How do you see those two words, the same or different?
So you and I have plenty of discussions about this, right? We talked about diversity is counting people and how we call inclusion making people count, allowing people to be heard, allowing all voices to have at least an ability to voice their perspectives, to add to the pool of meaning, to contribute without fear or repercussions, and being authentic in the workplace without being excluded.
Okay. Well, and so tell me then, along with those lines, what is the impact of inclusion on organizational climate and culture? But before that, can you help our listeners understand a little bit more the difference between climate and culture? Because that's another term I hear used a lot interchangeably, and you and I both know they're very different things.
That is one of the questions that if we had the exact answer, I mean, it's like it would be a whole new paper or a whole new academic finding. But I like to look at culture and climate from the perspective of Shane, which is an academic paper that talks in not only an academic paper, but a book about how do we define what culture is, which is the overarching existing structures of organizations. And that culture is comprised of models, setting, and artifacts. And so when we look at it holistically, you look at models in a culture setting, we're talking about our spouse values, the thing we say we believe in, the things that are intangible, they're invisible, but we can tell they exist. Then you move on to settings, and the settings are more of those visible things like the workforce distribution, how many of X, Y, and Z people do you have? If we say we value gender equality, are we doing equal pay? Those kind of things that are tangible that we can research and look. It could be even be a policy, right? A written policy that talks about that. Those are the settings and artifacts. Now, under that, the tacit assumptions that we make about how we view models, settings, and artifacts, that's mm-hmm. where your beauty of climate lays in. So it's not like we have these two very different things that are in very different spectrums, but they kind of work with each other. Mm-hmm. And they are interdependent, right? Because a climate, if it's persistent enough, can definitely eventually affect the culture. And hopefully the culture is the one with the models and settings driving the toxic assumptions of the workforce. So I hope that kind of gives you an overarching of a three-layer sort of kind of models, settings, mm-hmm. artifacts that kind of show it, and then the toxic assumptions on the bottom that is the climate.
No, that's really insightful. So let me ask you this. Can you have a good culture and a negative climate? And inversely, can you have a good climate and a negative culture?
I would think that's another question. I think it's chapter two of that book that Shane published about culture and climate. I would think that there can be alignment or misalignment, right? So if you say what we believe, that everybody gets a fair chance and we hire all kinds of folks in this organization, and your artifacts and your setting shows that you are homogenous in a certain way, there's a misalignment between what you're saying. So now your climate, it's going to be different because what you say you do mm-hmm. and what you do is not in alignment. And that can cause some problems. And then eventually you can have an unhealthy culture. I would say that it's kind of rare to have spouse values that are toxic, right? Like most of the time people say zero tolerance for discrimination, zero tolerance for sexual harassment. I have never met an organization that says this is okay. We can have 3% or we can have 4%.
Right, right.
I have never met that. But what I have met is the misalignment of what you say you do and what you believe in and what actually happens in real time and the perceptions of that. So it's a tough question to ask. It is possible to have the best intentions. It is possible to have good values and still have a toxic climate if the accountability piece, which to me is so crucial in leadership. If people are not held accountable to align themselves with their spouse values, you're definitely going to have toxicity in the climate side if you're not monitoring the behaviors and making sure that there's alignment.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm glad you said that, right? Because I think inclusion, right? When we go back and think about inclusion, what it looks like, what it feels like and all that, you know, a lot of times when we talk about just inclusion and you extend it out and you start talking about diversity, equity, that kind of stuff, a lot of folks tend to gravitate to race and gender. But it's I found that, yes, it absolutely, that does happen. A lot of times it's less about race and gender and more about in-groups and out-groups, right? Mm-hmm. And that can change, right? If your models and your settings, your policies say this thing, but the way that they're being walked out and carried out is something different that could be based on gender. It could be based on race. It could be based on in-groups and out-groups, right? For example, what comes to mind is veterans and non-veterans. That might happen, right? People that graduated from Yale versus the ones that graduated from, you know, Phoenix University, that might create some in-groups and out-groups. And I think when you think about inclusivity, it's what does that truly look like and feel like, and how does that impact the organizational climate or culture?
I think you have a good point there, Saul. And I'll say add one thing to what you're saying. The issues that I see is that because we haven't done a good job at resolving the primary dimensions of diversity, right? Like because we're not 100% inclusive with the primary, we haven't elevated our efforts to the secondary dimensions of diversity, social economics. You have a ton of other things. And yes, I know that the genesis of some of the disadvantages, or most of the disadvantaged generational wealth and stuff has a lot of the foundation, the primary dimensions. But when we ignore those other dimensions that are actually less visible, let's just say you can just walk up to a person and say that that person's neurodivergent, for example, unless you have an interaction. If we ignore those, then we're more likely to exclude people without knowing it. And if we do the lens from the people in the majority, and I mean that in control period, if we look from that lens and we don't ask for inclusion of those different point of views, we're going to create rules that are, if you're colorblind, you're going to make colorblind rules. And colorblind rules don't take in consideration diversity, and much less doesn't focus on being inclusive, if that makes sense.
Right. So it sounds like what you're saying is creating space for everyone, right? Creating enough space so that everyone can get what they need, meet people where they're at.
And before you do that, I think that psychological safety is crucial, right? Like a lot of the times that you hear that people cannot be authentic and you have all these other names and things that people have labeled. I think that one of the key elements of inclusion, especially in the workplace, especially related to culture and climate, is the ability to listen to different opinions and still maintain your ability to function, right? Like, how is it possible that someone who doesn't agree with you, who have different values, who have viewed the world from a different experience, how do you invite them to see different perspective, your perspective, and how do you yourself are inclusive enough to get in their perspective so that you can get to a consensus and feel that pool of meaning was missing, right? Because I think one perspective is missing the other. And I'm by no means justifying any intentional, implicit discrimination or anything like that. But I think that when people, it's frustrating to me when people say we talk enough about these issues. Are we having the right conversations about inclusion? Are we inviting the people in the workplace to have dissenting opinions so that we can get to a better place of convergence, which you and I talk about, the two things you can't do at the same time, right? So that's my original thought about that. We have to do more of listening to one another, understanding really what the issues are, getting working on the first dimension of diversity and moving forward to the second dimensions of diversity so that we can be more inclusive in general.
No, that makes so much sense, right? And I think a lot of times things are easier said than done, right? I remember a lot of times in the military when I was trying to operationalize DEI, right? Diversity and inclusion, and we started using agile practices like human-centered design or Scrum. And some of the pushback was, you know, aside from, you know, oh my God, a Scrum, it's costly, it takes a long time. Well, you don't need to be a Scrum Master to do Scrum, you just take those principles. But, you know, a lot of times because those modalities are very inclusive, they bring everyone to add to the pool of meaning, regardless of your rank. You know, some of the pushback was, well, are you expecting me to bring all entry-level people, right? All the new sailors that have been in the Navy for 6 months to a year to every single decision. No, that's not what I'm saying. There's a time and place for that. However, I think there's something to be said when you don't include the voice of everyone. It doesn't mean you bring every single junior person in right from the top down, but when you don't at least consider or bring in those voices or hear those voices, you might be well-intended in what you're doing and inadvertently creating more work for them. And so I've always thought about that in terms of when you don't include the right voices, what can happen? And I think, you know, it can range from people feeling excluded to maybe even filing a grievance. So I'm wondering, can you talk a little bit about how inclusivity, right, within the context of culture and climate, how that helps organizations? Okay, how is an organization gonna benefit financially, for example, from being more inclusive?
Oh my goodness, I get a lot of pushback in a lot of areas when we talk about interest convergence, right, and what's important to a group and to the other. What's so important about inclusion is the ability of us leveraging the best in everyone, the best version of themselves, the best expertise, the best knowledge, the best experiences. And to do that, we have to be inclusive. We have to be able to listen to dissenting opinions. We have to be listening to folks that are different than us. If we don't have an environment at work where folks can definitely bring their toxic experiential knowledge to that force, how are we going to be able to serve, let's just say, just to make a good point, the workforce of 2030, which is 51% diverse. It's the first time that Gen Z will be 30% of the workforce in 2030, and our clients also are going to be diverse. And if we inside haven't figured out how to work together as a company, how can you serve them? How can you take care of them? How can you become the number one choice organization to come to when you don't even speak their language? I mean, I have two Gen Zs back here, and we're not even in the same conversation, but I try to be inclusive of their beliefs, not because I don't believe that I'm right, but because I believe that that everybody has something to add. So every organization, every company, every place of work should make every effort to provide a healthy work environment, to reduce the cognitive load and stress of having to fit in so that I can perform better. Because the more I'm worried about not fitting in, the more I'm worried about I'm not accepted, how can I give you my best work? It's impossible, right? I'm trying to put a facade. I'm trying to wear a mask. I'm trying to be light. And if I'm trying to do all that, what else am I not concentrating on? Work. Right. Selling the company, selling our products, all the millions of things. So the business case is, if you want to make money, and I know that sounds rough, take care of your people, create a psychological safe space, be inclusive, and treat them well. That's the point. Treat them with dignity and respect. All with dignity and respect.
Absolutely. And it's you know, when that doesn't happen is when we start getting into trouble, right? Because if you're not being inclusive, right? Like to your point, what else are you focusing on? And that brings up another thought, right? A lot of organizations talk about, we're very inclusive, we value diversity. but then I hear terms like, yes, that person wasn't the right fit. And I have this disdain for that term, right? The right fit, because when I think about that, right, I think about assimilation versus when you're truly being inclusive of someone, I'm not trying to tell you, you need to wear this kind of suit. Your hair needs to be this way. You need to do this and do this. You need to look this way, sound this way, right? Because that's assimilation. Mm-hmm. And we, if we're truly trying to value our diversity and be inclusive, then I'm not trying to get you to fit in. I'm trying to get you to come in and compliment us and for us to benefit as much as you benefit from us.
The term that we use nowadays is value add. What do you add? And I think it's Dr. Page is a doctor who wrote a book, and he talked about imagine if it was basically a company was trained that has a route, and you pick people, not everybody rides the train all the way through. So you pick people that have different experiences in different spots, right? Because they get on and off the train in a different space. So when you have diversity and you have a train of people that are diverse, you get the complete picture of the puzzles, right? Like the people that ride from this place to this place, the person that went from point A to point B and C and D, and that is more a more complete version and vision of what needs to happen, not just fragmented and one-sided.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to bring up an example of a misunderstanding between diversity and inclusion that was, I'm not going to say funny, but it was interesting. I'm actually walking on a jetway because I'm going in a flight, and I looked at this airline that's really boasting how inclusive they are. And I said, well, that's interesting. I've never seen a mural with all pictures and paintings of people. I'm so excited. And as soon as I walk in, I see all the Hispanics are the cleaning crew and the mechanics. I walk to another part of the mural and all the women are flight attendants. And then I walk to the almost to the part of, you know, the jetway to get into the plane, and I see all the Caucasian males that are the pilots. And I was like, I need to call the DEI expert. Like, what happened? Like, what absolutely happened? This is a perfect visual, perhaps a diverse workforce, but not necessarily an inclusive workplace. And it's something that when we assess culture, we see is that inverted, we're really inclusive where is your diversity at? It's almost never. It's very rarely sprinkled into leadership. It's very concentrated in one piece. And that murals poke to the levels of that. And if we have time, I'll tell you how that turns out in real life. When I return from that trip, I get in my car and the check engine light comes in. And then I drive to the not the service station, but the place where they sell cars. I can't even
remember. Dealership.
The dealership. And I walk in and I'm coming out of a flight, so I have jeans, my hair is in this heel, you know, I'm not looking my best. And somebody, one of the ladies there gives me a trash bag and says, I'm glad you're here, go clean the toilet. So it's like the toilet's overflowing and there's a mess in the conference room. And I'm like, I'm a client.
Hold on. So this is you coming after your trip. Your check engine light comes on. You stop off at a dealership. And they think you're the cleaning lady?
I'm there to help. But I'm relating that back to the mural, right? Because what subliminal messages of inclusion or exclusion are we sending that when you see someone that looks like me, we fit a certain role? So that was the manifestation of that mural, that subliminal message that wasn't intentional. It lived out an experience as a microaggression to me, the human being that walks in to possibly get a new car if this check engine light says that, you know, my car is a bust and I need a new one. So that's the danger of convoluting of confusing diversity with inclusion.
Wow, that's so insightful. I never really thought about it that way. But, you know, I was thinking like, man, that is kind of a stereotype. But what is a ripple effect, right? There's such a significant ripple effect because probably maybe, right? Those people at the dealership didn't necessarily see that exact same mural, but other murals like it that depict certain demographic groups with certain job descriptions. And so when they saw you, they're like, oh, cleaning lady, here you go. They get some, wow, that's.
Well, the media doesn't help. Think about it. Like when you see, and even entertainment, when you see certain Hispanics or you see certain folks, how do you depict them? How do you picture them? Because then that those who haven't had any contact with that demographic, they have been very isolated and the socialization experience is very, you know, very contained. Mm-hmm. They don't have a point of reference. They are making the point of reference from what they see, right?
Right.
So that's interesting.
That is, wow. My mind's kind of blown right now. This is so insightful. Mm-hmm. Before we go forward, I'd like to do a quick plug, pay some bills, and give a shout out to Strategic Advisory Board, the SAB, for their support and opportunity to have this platform and this podcast. The Strategic Advisory Board is a group of high-level CEOs helping businesses succeed. And they do this by helping their clients scale their business, execute strategy as fast as possible while focusing on the problems to be solved so that their businesses can offer a product or service that fills a gap in the marketplace. For more information, queue up their website at www.strategicadvisorboard.com. Follow them on LinkedIn, on Instagram and YouTube and all their other social media platforms. Now back to our discussion. We're discussing, you know, your case study of or the example you had about the airport, you know, having the murals depicted of certain demographic groups. And then you walk right into that, into the dealership, man. How was that for you?
Well, you know, I usually have a visceral response to anything that's not inclusive, right? But I think taking a step back and understanding how that happened and taking that experience and saying, how do I, as an inclusion expert, take that experience and set as an example so people can see in real life how the things that we are trained to perceive or that are exposed, you know, all the time are not inclusive. I mean, you have never heard be part of this all-inclusive flight. No, like exclusive, you know, vacation. Exclusive right. is a term that is used a lot. It makes you feel like a group of elitists, right? Or folks that are in the in. But it also implies that there's a group that is out, or at least a couple of groups that are out. And it goes back to your in and out groups. The personal effect for me, of course, I think that now I'm more mature and I'm a little bit more, I'm not say tolerant, but more likely to explain how those things landed on me. Like I did have a conversation with the manager of the dealership and explained that. And, you know, they were extremely apologetic. And I think sometimes we focus on the intent and not on the impact, right? So a lot of people like to say, well, they didn't mean it. Or that's just how so-and-so is. So you got to understand the era and the age in which this person comes from. And when we are addressing inclusion, we shouldn't, it's a switch, it's the impact. What impact do you have with your actions? And if we are not able to flip those two things, we're going to struggle with inclusion in general. So I think for those of us who, I said, are practitioners of inclusion or try to be, because no one's 100% inclusive, but we need to be more aware of the impact that we have on folks. And you think I don't say stuff that is exclusionary. I am a radar for like, wait, where did that come from? Why did I say that? Like awareness is the most important piece. And also the premise. Was my premise to get this person in trouble for thinking I was a cleaning lady, or explain the impact that she has on all the clients that, much like me, belong to a marginalized group and come in there? How do we get treated? And what is that customer experience? Would I be a repeat customer or a place to think I'm there to clean the bathroom? So those kind of things, I think, are more important. And I think I learned this a long time ago when I was an investigator for the Navy Inspector General. When we are inclusion practitioners, we got to be careful. If we become part of the investigation, meaning that if I get so invested that I'm defending that I'm a woman, a minority, we have a harder time being objective. Mm-hmm. And helping others understand and see my point of view, because I would get emotionally invested and then I wouldn't be able to argue my point, or at least I wouldn't be able to present my point in a way that is impactful to the person and the other side.
Right. Well, I think it speaks a lot to, you know, for organizations, right? And by no means am I saying that money is the driving force, but I think when we talk about the business case versus the more imperative, right, of being more inclusive, I think when we focus on the business case and we're able to socialize the importance of the impact, right? The importance of being inclusive, because I think I look at it not as how much is it going to cost me to be more inclusive or have an inclusive initiative? It's what is it going to cost you not to do it, right? In your case, it could have been a $60,000 vehicle sale, all because they assumed that you were the cleaning lady, right? So what is it costing us? Is it attrition? Is it turnover? Is it people not staying long enough? And then how long does it take us to train the replacements? And so I think there's so many facets and so many ways that we can look at the business case. But when it's done right, I think it by default, the more imperative is taken care of as a subsequent byproduct of being inclusive for the sake of the business case. So I think many ways to slice it. And for our listeners out there, you know, especially leaders and managers eager to implement more inclusive practices into their organizations, and specifically, you know, how inclusivity or inclusion impacts organizational climate and culture, what would you say are a few actionable steps they can start off with that they can take to improve that within their organizations?
Well, just much like getting into your car and setting your GPS, you have to know where you are before you decide. You have to know your coordinates before you set a destination. So I recommend that they do a baseline assessment or a needs assessment to better understand where are we. And then, you know, you have all the options. You have change management plans and things of that nature that show you from where you are to a transit state to a desirable end state. But a lot of this stuff just requires the intentionality and accountability to hold each other accountable, right, for the things that we say we stand for. But also I will say this, and I know this is probably not the most popular thing for business. If you say that this matters and there's no money behind any of the initiatives that you have, that inclusion, that you're not reaching out to the, you know, to those universities, to those places where you can find the diversity, if you're not making the effort because it costs money, then everything you have left is lip service. And that incongruency is going to say your spouse values, which is going back to the models, do not match your artifacts in your organization, and you're going to lose credibility. So for me, it's creating the alignment first between your models and your settings, and measuring that by looking at your artifacts and looking at your understanding your toxic assumptions of the workforce. Mm-hmm. So you can do an assessment, and they have a strategic action plan that addresses those issues, but that has true buy-in and that has the funding to support it. Enough with this, we value everything, but I want to just go and have a lunch and experience somebody else's lunch. And then sometimes we don't even pay for the lunch. We have people bring their own food so I can taste their own cuisine.
Right.
We don't even have a budget for that, for the soul set event, which I'm not advocating for that, because I think true inclusion goes way far beyond just getting to know. But I think that's part of it. And also, if we're doing a training, because we know that training solves world hunger. Every problem we have is training. The training has to be based on Bloom's taxonomy, more than just knowledge transfer. It has to go through all those stages. You should have a Kilpatrick model to test it. There's a ton of things that you can do that you can see where you are, understand where you want to go, create a roadmap, get the financial and the people to support that, and create that alignment. If you don't create that alignment, you're going to have a culture that is not healthy, and that's not good for anyone.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to have to bring you back to him for another session. I think we can talk for hours about this, but I think you make a really great point about inclusivity within our learning environments, right? How people learn and what models are we using, not only to put out the training and check the block, but are we really testing for knowledge transfer, and what does that look like? Right. If we're not being inclusive of the different types of people that we have and how they learn, because HR people, IT people, finance people, they may all, you know, get along, but they speak very different languages. Right. One group might be about the birds and the bees and the flowers and my tomatoes and my dog and my grandson. And, you know, whereas other folks might be like, hey, get to the point. I don't have time to socialize, right? And so how do we create inclusive environments where everyone can contribute, right? I think you say it a lot of times, to add to the pool of meaning, because having that context might drive, you know, decision-making one way or the other when we're truly being considerate of everyone. Yeah. Man, we can talk forever. Can I get that commitment from you that you'll come back for another one?
Of course, of course. Awesome. We can always talk about anything you want, inclusion. So, yes.
So I'm going to put you on the spot real quick. What projects do you have going on? Before we wrap up, I just kind of want to get some insight about you. What are you up to these days? I know you're a doctoral student. And as I understand it, you're a best-selling author. Tell us a little bit about that.
You are also a best-selling co-author in that. We are both co-authors. Well, we're in the process of writing a book, and of course, there's a lot of work that goes into the dissertation phase, which is I'll be heading here next year, and it is also, of course, of culture and climate alignment and artificial intelligence and ensuring that we use artificial intelligence as a tool and not as a replacement for humans. You know, it's basically leveraging those kind of things to enhance inclusion, because on the other hand, you have all these algorithms that we label, and they are discriminatory. And so part of the work that I'm doing with the dissertation will be focused on leveraging the tool of artificial intelligence to enhance inclusion and understand the state of organizations. So that's really interesting. And also we're talking about AI and inclusion in the school settings, which is part of one of the projects I have with the University of Southern California. They gave me a scholarship to go to one of those conferences. So really interesting work, and I'm really happy about the opportunity to tell you about it and to share with everyone else that's listening.
Look at you. How awesome. I get to talk to you about it. Yeah. And so, for our listeners out there, the book is called Fortaleza, right? It's on Amazon.
Yeah. Fortaleza is a bestseller, and it has 22 authors, the Latino authors, and they're just talking about it's an anthology, so they're talking about identity. They're talking about the very things that we're talking about here, how the plight and the challenges that they had to face to get to a better space. And of course, I'm in the chapter that talks about equity and courage and that kind of thing. So really interesting.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, folks, if you have a chance to check it out, it's called Fortaleza. It's on Amazon. Pick it up. How can people get a hold of you?
LinkedIn is the easiest way. You can email my personal email, redblue0911@gmail.com. Or you can just go to LinkedIn, Veronica Lawrence Ortega, and just send me a message and we can connect.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We're coming up on time, but Veronica, it's always, always a treat and refreshing to talk to you. I know we can talk for hours.
And we will.
And I'll definitely have you back. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on another episode of the Inclusivity EQ podcast. Remember, inclusion knows no bounds. It's the key to unlocking the full potential of every industry. Veronica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe and please share your thoughts on social media using the hashtag inclusive industries or inclusivity EQ podcast. Till next time, stay tuned, stay open-minded, curious, and keep building your own inclusivity EQ. I'm your host, Saul Gomez, signing off. Catch you on the flip side. Out here.
Thanks for listening to the Inclusivity EQ podcast with Saul Gomez. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advisement on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we will see you on the next episode.